All right, we're back to the red flag inspection guide. This is our final part of a six-part series. Again, you can email me if you have questions or comments, paul@internachi.org, and I'll gladly answer and get back with you. I'd help you if any inspection topic you've got. I've been around for about 30 years doing home inspections, commercial properties, all types of multifamily, industrial properties. I've done just about anything you can imagine in my 30 years of inspection. Not that I know it all. I don't never claim that, but I will certainly be able to help you. Hopefully, if you have questions or something, if you're new in the business or been in it for a while, if you just got a common question, email me. I'll gladly take the time to try and answer your question. Okay, let's get started. We're going to talk about some hazardous material today. Yeah, hazardous material are a problem that can adversely or dramatically affect property value. Every state's passed disclosure laws that institute stricter storage and cleanup regulations of toxic waste. All of us need to understand that there's hundreds of hazardous materials in our homes. Some homeowners will be unknowingly dump these harmful products on their property, bury them, whatever. And, you know, we can only report what we see, but when hazardous materials are dumped onto our land instead of being disposed of properly, they eventually create problems with the land and they create problems in our water system. So you got to be careful. Some hazardous product will recognize, and I'll go through, some of them you'll recognize the names I give you. Others, you know, if it depends on what type of property it is, if you see signs that someone's been dumping something on the property, even motor oil, it could be hazardous. So that's something you need to make your client aware of. There are four major classifications of hazardous material. You have the corrosive, you have toxic, you have reactive, and ignitable. Corrosive materials slowly dissolve and wear away gradually. Corrosive material is a chemical compound that's safely contained in one type of container, usually a metal container. But if it's placed in a different type of container, it's going to eat through it and it'll dissolve that container. So therefore, you're going to have some leaks. Toxic material almost always has a poison identification on the bottle, usually accompanied with a skull and crossbone symbol. So even if you can't see the whole label, if you see a skull and crossbone symbol, that's going to be something that should tell you it's hazardous material. In older properties, they use a product called chlordane, and that was for pest control. Chlordane was put under houses, pier and beams, and under slabs. The problem with that was it slowly just got into the soil and it stays there forever. Another thing would be creosote that we treat all of our telephone poles or products that go into water. If you have creosote on the ground, that can be contamination. There's four major classification though, as I said earlier. A reactive material is one that when the container is by itself is fine, but if you mix that product with another everyday product, there's a possibility of toxic gases or even an explosion. Ignitable material is very easy to identify, as a container will have an explosive or flammable warning symbol, label, or sign on it. And that would tell you that it's flammable material. Any of those type products you start seeing around a house would be something you probably want to talk to your home buyer about, let her be aware of it. Here's something that comes up in homes a lot of times, though, asbestos. Interested homeowners and prospective purchasers can obtain information concerning asbestos from the U.S. Consumer Protection Safety Commission and the U.S. Environmental Protection, EPA. This is a comment you may want to put in your report, as first paragraph here. If you suspect there's asbestos, you can tell your client to further evaluate that. And these are areas they can go to learn more about it. Asbestos is a mineral fiber found in rocks. There are several kinds of asbestos fibers, though, all of which are fire resistant and they're not easily destroyed or degraded by natural process. That's why asbestos is so hard to have removed and disposed of, and it's costly. But asbestos has been shown to cause cancer of the lung and stomach, according to studies of workers and others exposed to asbestos. There's no level of exposure to asbestos fibers that experts can assure us is completely safe. That's why it's a red flag for us as inspectors and for homeowners buying a property. Asbestos is something you can research. It covers a lot of different material. A lot of time we put up this ceilings where we staple tiles up to the ceiling, and that had asbestos in it. A lot of vinyl flooring had asbestos in it. Siding around the outside of the house had asbestos. And believe it or not, that asbestos siding on homes seems to last forever. And it's asbestos. So, and if anyone wants to get rid of it, then a lot of times they have to go through Environmental Protection Agency, and someone has to be certified, licensed, qualified to dispose of asbestos materials. Asbestos has been used in a wide range of products, household building material, such as appliances, ceiling tile covering, wall and pipe covering, floor tiles, and some roofing materials even. Basically, asbestos has been in products for four reasons. It was to strengthen it, the product's material, for thermal insulation within a product, for thermal and acoustical insulation, even decoration on exposed surfaces, and for fire protection. Asbestos was a good fire protection. Sometimes we say things will last 50 years. Asbestos is one of those that we didn't know what it was 50 years ago, but all of a sudden it starts proving itself as being a hazardous material. If you're inspecting older homes, you may find asbestos roof coverings and asbestos wall coverings. If you suspect that, you probably should let your client know that that is considered today to be a hazardous material. Until 1970, many types of building products and insulation materials used in homes contained asbestos. Asbestos was banned in 1977. So those two dates are dates you should consider whenever you're inspecting a home. Was it built before 1977? Was it built during the 1970s? If so, then there may be concerns as you go into a property that you look out and see if there's asbestos. And again, like I said, you can Google it and find asbestos products online if you need a visual to see what these things look like. But asbestos is considered to be a hazardous material. Another one is some of the asbestos insulation material. This resembles rocky gravel. It's installed by pouring it into a desired location. Insulators, also called as loose fill or blown-in insulation. Colors to look out for in these pebbles are grayish, brown, or silver gold. Yeah, it's dangerous to spend too much time trying to identify the mineral. Inhaling of its toxic fibers can cause latent illnesses and cancer like mesothelioma. I got that out finally. That's a tongue twister. This is kind of what it looks like. You see my picture on the screen. It's loose fill. It's known as blown-in insulation because that's how they blowed it in or poured it in, if you would. The type of asbestos in insulation is fluffy. It's loose. It's lumpy, and has a texture that is granular. Different from most bat and blanket insulation because it doesn't have paper or any other type of backing materials on it. You can see from the picture. I think you'll notice it as you get into a house. I think you'll be ready to see that. The correct way to remove it, have somebody that's qualified to handle hazardous materials remove it and go back in with some of the newer insulation we have today. Be careful though, because if you're in the attic breathing this stuff or stirring it up, you're going to inhale it. Could be hazardous to you, depending on what condition your lungs are in or how old you are. A lot of this stuff can affect us health-wise, so please be careful out there. We don't want any inspector to be hurt from this, but we want you to be aware of it. Make your clients aware of it if you happen to see it during your inspection. This is just a picture looking at through an old attic. You can see the picture here. I stole this off of a Google site, but you can see how that insulation looks. So if you go in the attic, you see something that looks like that, may be an issue. All right, asbestos products to look for and where they're used in and around houses. Vinyl floor tiles. Remember the little 12 by 12 inch tiles? Vinyl sheeting flooring. Patching and joint compounds for walls and ceilings. Textured paints, steam pipes, boilers, furnace ducts, resilient floor tiles, cement sheets, millboard, paper, door gaskets, soundproofing, decorative materials, asbestos cement roofing, shingles and siding, artificial ash and embers, talking about being in a fireplace. A lot of that stuff is asbestos because it doesn't burn. So it can get hot, turn red, but it doesn't burn. Some toxic waste, though, can be highly toxic and long-lived. These toxic substances can pollute water supplies that serve an entire community, pollute the ground a community is built on, and even contaminate food if it's grown on polluted soils or irrigated with polluted water. Water quality has become a significant public safety issue for us today. As you see the water shortage, the demand for water, I'm sure you've seen on the news where certain cities like in Michigan had water that was had some toxic waste to it. It doesn't take much. A lot of our plants and all had asbestos. Sometimes it runs off. I inspected a property in Texas, an industrial property, and as I walked in, they asked me to put on these steel shoe covers. I mean, they literally steel covered my toe, all my entire boot. Wear certain face gear, respirator type equipment, and a jumpsuit to protect me, and gloves as I went around looking at the inspection. As I got there, they didn't tell me that when they booked the inspection with me. They only said, look, we have a facility in a certain town near you. We'd like for you to go out and inspect it and tell us if it's a building that we could use in case a hurricane or tornado shut us down in the Houston area. Well, I was shocked, to say the least. As I go in, they actually have a lab set up in there that they're testing the groundwater and the air 24 hours a day. So what did I get into? I had no idea, but they had some private letters on the wall that I happened to take a glance at as I walked by and took a picture of so I could read it later. It was a fertilizer plant. They developed fertilizer, and the fertilizer had actually leaked into the ground around this industrial facility and got into the water of the town and into the lake in the town. So it was a major issue, and EPA had been involved in it. So that was pretty much out of my realm of inspections. I got involved in it without knowing what was there. And we did the inspection because I was looking more structural than anything else. And we got off the property quickly. They paid very well, probably not enough. But if they call me again, so can you re-inspect it? My answer is going to be a definite no. So be careful what you get into, guys. Sometimes we say, yeah, I can do that. Well, you sure? So be careful. All right. Water well pollution from industrial sources. This is what I just got through talking about. You take a plant that did fertilizer. If that gets into the groundwater, every time it rains, that water, that contaminant is getting spread even further down in the ground into the drinking water, the water table. So it can cause all kinds of issues. This one I just got through telling you about, the fertilizer plant was shut down, and they couldn't do anything with it for I don't know how many years. I don't remember reading how many years they shut her down, but they basically never be able to be used again for a while. But that affected the entire town, but the runoff from something like that. So, you know, if you see something like that, how can I just tell you, be careful. You know, if you spot contamination, toxic waste, write it up. I mean, that's something that we need to be aware of. Septic systems near a water well or near a pond or lake or tank or water source, that can cause contamination. That would be a toxic waste that you would need to notify your client, hey, there's an issue with it. Radon is another one. It's not so much popular in my area, the southern part of the states here in Texas, but in other areas, I know radon is a big deal. So if you're not doing radon inspections, I would encourage you to get qualified to do those and then go out and start doing radon tests on properties that you inspect. Why not? You're there anyway. So you got to go back. But radon, you can't see it, you can't smell it, you can't taste it, but it's a radioactive gas. So it comes from natural breakdowns of uranium. It's found in high concentration in soils, rocks containing uranium, granite, shale, phosphates, and pitch blend. So, you know, you guys are probably much more familiar than I am on radon, but that is considered to be a hazardous material. So get qualified where you can test those and do your inspection to the best of your ability for your client. It can be found in soils contaminated with certain types of industrial waste, such as byproducts from uranium or phosphate mining. In outdoor air, radon is diluted in such low concentrations that it doesn't represent really a safety hazard. But once you're inside a house, inside of a basement, anywhere that's enclosed space, radon can accumulate, and indoor levels depend on the building's construction, the concentration of radon in the underlying soil, and what's coming through the basement walls even. So radon is something that is hazardous that you need to be aware of. This talks about the only known health effects associated with exposure to elevated levels of radon is increased risk of developing lung cancer. Not everyone's exposed to elevated levels of radon will develop lung cancer, of course. And the time between exposure and the onset of disease, it can vary to many, many years. Radon's always been present in the air. Concerns about elevated indoor concentration first arose in the late 1960s when houses were found in the West to have been built where materials contaminated by waste from uranium mines. So you don't know where a house is being built at or what happened around it. Sometimes things change, but it's a change because it created problems and the plants got shut down and moved, but yet the houses were built on contaminated soil. So radon testing, very important. Cases of high rate indoor radon levels resulting from industrial activity have been found in many parts of our country. We have only recently become aware, however, that houses in various parts of the U.S. may have high indoor radon levels caused by natural deposits of uranium in the soil in which the house was built. Most houses in the country are not likely to have a radon problem. In Texas, we have very little radon issues. People call for radon tests. I don't test it because we don't have issues here. It depends on, I guess, the part of the state, but in the southern part of Texas, we don't have radon issues. We have no basements, so we don't have that. Most of ours is sand and soil, clay, stuff like that where I'm at. Yours may be different. Anyway, the dilemma is that right now, no one knows which houses have that problem and which ones don't. You may wish to call your state radiation protection office to find out if any high levels have been discovered in your area or in the towns that you do the inspections in, just for safety. If you're going to be doing radon testing or telling your client, hey, it's possible radon is in this area, make sure you know what you're talking about. Don't just go out causing problems, but you do want to create a safety rim for your clients. How does radon get into the house? It's a gas that moves through small spaces in the soil and rocks in which a house is built, seeps into the house through dirt floors, cracks in concrete floors, walls, floor drains, sump pumps, joints, tiny cracks or pores in hollow brick walls. So it seeps in. If it's got radon around it, it'll find its way in. You just have to look for it. It can enter into water within private water wells and be released into the house when the water is used. Usually, radon is not a problem with large community water supplies where it's likely to be reached or released into the outdoor air before it reaches the house. But that's why you want to have the water testing. If you're going to do water well inspections, you should have the water tested. If you're in an area where there's radon, that's another segment of the test that you want to have your laboratory that does your testing on the water test for radon. More information concerning radon and water, contact your state's radiation protection office. Some unusual cases, radon can be released from material used in the construction of the house. We already went through several things, that material that had products such as asbestos. So some products could even have radon that they release. An example, a house that has a large stone fireplace or has a solar heating system where the heat's stored in large beds of stone. In general, building materials are not a major source of indoor radon, but since you can't see it or smell radon, special equipment has to be used to in order to detect if there's radon present or not. They do have radon detectors. The two most popular detectors are the charcoal canister and the alpha track detector. Both devices are exposed to the air in your home for a specific period, then they're sent to a lab for analysis. There are other techniques requiring operation by trained personnel that can also be used to measure radon levels, but those techniques may be more expensive than the devices mentioned above. maybe beyond the scope of a home inspector, unless you're really into radon, and then that may be a valuable aspect for your inspection business. Underground storage tanks, hazardous waste, pipes usually 2 to 2.5 inches in diameter. These are emerging from the ground and capped or have a 180-degree elbow or bend. They're common for vent pipe for underground fuel and solvent tanks. You just don't know what may be in those tanks, but it could be hazardous material. Additional indicators of improperly disposed of toxic waste, oil spots on the ground, or areas that are dark brown to black where vegetables won't grow. Holes 2, 3 inches in diameter in garage floors set so the fluid can flow into them. Sumps are in or a pit or reservoir serving to drain or the receptacles for any type of liquid. We don't know what type of liquids are going down there. Evidence of extensive paint or chemical storage facilities. Evidence of facilities or equipment indicating mechanical or fabrication work at that location. I know not too far from me, there is a well, a deep drilled well at the state, and the EPA actually allows chemicals that they can't do anything else with that's hazardous. They will go in and pour that down in those holes. Believe it or not, there is a subdivision, a major subdivision right around this location. That's probably about, for me, they're probably 10 miles. But those are deep wells. They have those deep wells scattered all around the US where they dispose of chemicals that they can't do anything else with, but they're hazardous. They tell us that going down that deep doesn't cause a problem. We'll know in time. Additional indicators of improperly disposed toxic waste. Many states have regulations requiring removal of those tanks. If they've not been used for 6 months or similar time period, they want them dug up, disposed of properly, and the ground properly treated. Evidence of underground tanks can be also trigger investigation of possible contamination. So if you find something that looks like, as I described earlier, the pipes extending out above the ground, it may be a buried tank. You don't know what's there. At the least, you can ask tell your client to check with a home property owner. Do they know what it is? If they don't know what it is either, they may want to just have testing done to make sure that they're safe buying that property. Okay, the potential of one being buried like it can be a very expensive problem. Whoever owns the property today is the one that must pay for the cleanup. So if your client buys it, and they're going to be responsible for the contamination, that can be extremely costly. Extremely costly. So you definitely want to make sure if you see underground storage tanks or the evidence of them, let your client know. I recommend further evaluation. Here's one that's common to us. I mean, we see this have for years, lead hazardous from paint and from pipes. What is lead poisoning? Well, other than taking your bullet out and killing an animal, that lead will kill them. We're not talking about that, though. We're talking about lead poisoning that occurs when the body contains a high concentration of lead. Lead poisoning can cause paralysis, brain damage, and convulsion. When the lead paint first came out, I went and got certified as a lead paint or lead inspector. And what they told us is that children tend to absorb more lead than adults, and they're more likely to exhibit hand-to-mouth behavior. They also told us that what kids like to do was chew on windowsills. Well, I don't know about you, but I never had a child that I had chewing on a windowsill. My dog, maybe. My kid, no. But that was one of the things that they said happened in some low-income properties that had lead-based paint there. So lead-based paint was certainly an issue. But after all the tests, all the study that we had to do to get certified in this, ends up, they said, if they paint over it, they conceal it, and it's no longer a danger. So the lead paint issue became almost a moot point if someone painted the property. So if they started coming in, sanding things down, remodeling, lead dust got in the air, that began to create a problem. So if you have a house that's built in those time periods, it could be an issue that maybe you want to make sure you let your client know the age of the house that could have had lead paint or may have. But lead hazards from pipes and paint, drinking water, it can become contaminated if it passes through lead pipes. In the late 1930s, lead water pipes were still being used. 1986, the Safe Drinking Water Act requires the use of lead-free solder, pipes, flux, and facilities connected to public water. So they started taking effect in 1986 to get rid of the lead. And that's a long time we had lead and people had lead in their bodies. In 1988, Congress banned the use of lead-based solder in plumbing application in houses and buildings. So federal government kind of got into it, started taking care of some of the lead as far as the water pipes and all go. But lead-based paint, the most probable place where lead-based paint will be found in houses or in the bathrooms and kitchen walls, on woodwork and on window frames. The use of lead-based paint was prohibited in 1980. So anything before 1980 could be even after for a few years till the paint supply diminished. Anything before 1980, though, could have lead-based paint. So if you find a house that you're inspecting and the woodwork is in poor shape, look around. You know, it may be time that you recommend they have a lead testing done on a house. Lead hazards paint, this visual inspection cannot determine whether a hazard exists. Checking the presence of lead-based paint requires removing samples and have it tested by a qualified laboratory. The probability of lead-based paint having been used in structures directly related to the age of it, like we said before, 1980, studies have shown that lead-based paint was used in 2/3 of all houses built prior to 1940 and 1/3 of all houses built from 1940 to 1960. So some of you live in areas where you have older homes, lead-based paint could be an issue, or lead-based plumbing. A smaller percentage of houses built between 1960 and 1980 were found also to contain lead-based paint. So it comes all the way up to 1980. So beware of that. Beware that commercial facilities in which metalwork, automotive radiator repairs, soldering activities were carried out are also likely to have lead contamination because the solder and all they used to do their soldering was lead. HUD warns that 3 out of 4 houses built prior to 1978 have lead-based paint. Think about that. Now, 75% of the houses built before 1978 have lead-based paint. So if you're inspecting a property older than 1978, beware. HUD says that they probably have lead-based paint. Okay, I want to thank you for attending our webinar. I hope you've enjoyed it. Hope you'll join us again for some other webinars. If you have other webinar topics you'd like for me to discuss or comments to share with me or comments on my presentation, please email me at paul@internachi.org. And until next time, take care, God bless, and be safe out doing your inspections.